Welcome to Popular Cultural Sharing. My name is Lawin and I am your host. In this podcast, we give you an outsider's perspective about European life, culture, and pretty much anything that is connected to this continent. So get ready to learn something new in a light and entertaining way. Welcome back, everyone, to Popular Cultural Cherry. It's your host, Lawin. And today is very special because we're actually interviewing a Filipino entrepreneur who's based in Europe. Pao Samontañes, he finished his studies some time ago in the Philippines from the University of the Philippines and is now one of the founders and the chief technology officer of his startup, OneWatt, which is a company that is based in Arnhem in the Netherlands that works with AI. So he'll be talking about his journey as an entrepreneur from the Philippines. And I'm so curious to hear about his story because it's not every day that you hear about a startup from a developing country like the Philippines actually getting accepted to an accelerator program and later on getting funding in Europe specifically. So as always, let's dive straight into the interview. Pao Samontañes, thank you so much for joining us today. Yeah, so maybe you can give us a little bit about your background. It's a very interesting story that you probably have for us today.
I'm an electronics engineer by training. I ventured into some startups back in 2010. I think around after 5 to 6 years, I decided that maybe it's time for me to start my own startup. So I was in Singapore back then.
Pao, maybe you can tell us a little bit about the startups that you started. Or maybe what got you interested into not really founding startups, but being involved in the startup network? And actually, what got you into Singapore in the first place?
My first job, my first actual job after studying is with a multinational company. So I stayed there for like 3 years. And then after the third year, I thought that I'm not contributing anything to the world. I was just writing codes for some big manufacturing company. So I felt that that wasn't for me. So that's why I decided to join a startup after that. So back then, I joined this startup called InSync. What they're doing is basically something similar to what Google Drive is doing now, basically syncing files from your computer to the cloud. I joined InSync, and then I felt that I was doing more. I was more in touch with the customers. I was able to get their problems. But the thing is, I was kind of shocked with how everything is done with in a startup. I didn't know how to code in Python. I didn't know how to do Unix or Ubuntu or any form of Linux commands. That was kind of foreign to me. So after some time, I decided that I don't want to be the burden in the team. So that's why I quit InSync and then moved to Singapore. Basically, I followed my friends to Singapore where they moved. And it so happened that when I was looking for a job in Singapore, I was able to get in touch with one kind of founder who was starting to build his team. And then I applied as one of their developers. And then I got in. So since then, I was more familiar with how startups work. And I like being able to dabble into the different aspects of the development. So from hardware to the software and even dealing with the clients. So that was kind of fun for me. And then since then, I was craving that kind of work. Being able to shift focus because I easily get bored.
When you were working for this big multinational company in the Philippines and you moved to your first startup, what was the initial feedback? What did your parents think of it? What did your friends think of it? Because I think this is what a lot of entrepreneurial-minded people, this is a conflict that they normally have. It's like, how will society or how will your parents perceive you if you go to this unknown path where you had this like laid out path, the common path that most people take to quote unquote success?
Actually, I think my parents until now, they still don't know what I'm doing. From startup to startup, they don't know what I'm doing. But they only know that I'm doing something with computers. It's an issue with the Asian mindset that you're supposed to work for a big multinational company and then climb the ladder. But it took them a while to kind of be happy with what I'm doing, especially during the times when I'm starting a new startup and then we have to kind of bootstrap or spend our own money for the project itself. They feel like I'm moving backwards, essentially.
So you talk a little bit about your parents, but when you told them that you were, you know, after this time of your life that you were doing a startup in the Philippines, then you moved to Singapore. I mean, what was their reaction then? Is it actually a step up that you leave your job to like jump into the unknown? But when we say an unknown, you jump into Singapore, which is like a more developed country. And those of you guys listening who don't know, actually Singapore is like our Silicon Valley in Southeast Asia, because that's where a lot of startups want to like found their companies. That's where all the venture capital is from. That's where like the network is so spread out for startups, right?
Actually, this is a funny story. When I moved to Singapore, I didn't tell my parents until 2 days before my flight. So I was afraid of telling them that I'll be moving to Singapore because one, I'm an only child, and two, they think that I won't survive on my own. So I only told them like 2 days before my actual flight. And then when I told them, right, it was one of those moments that I made my mom cry.
Oh.
So she wasn't really expecting that I'm leaving for a long time, for an indefinite amount of time. After reaching Singapore, right, everything was kind of prepared. Some of my friends were already in Singapore, so that was kind of planned. I'll be staying with them. So I gave myself around 1 to 2 months of time to find a new job in Singapore. So that was kind of my plan.
But that was, you were on a tourist visa technically, right?
Yes, I started with a tourist visa.
Cool. Yeah, that's a leap into the unknown. Like, yeah, I can imagine that discussion you had with your parents when you would tell them, oh, I was working in a multinational company. I went to a startup and now I'm just jumping into the unknown into Singapore with a tourist visa.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what happened once you were in Singapore? So you said you found a job eventually, which was also a startup. And how was that experience?
So actually, when I was applying to the different jobs in Singapore, what happened was I was choosing between either another multinational company and this startup. I already had the offers with the multinational company. As expected, their offer is much higher compared to the startup. But at the back of my mind, I was thinking, I don't want my experience, the one that I had with the multinational company before, to happen where my interest with what I'm doing dying down. So that's why I chose the startup path, even though my friends disagree with it. But yeah, I think it was the right decision for me because I was able to learn a lot more compared probably if I stayed with the other company.
And how different would you say is the startup scene in Manila, in the Philippines, versus that of in Singapore?
From the facade, I feel that the government gives much more support. Like, for example, we can complete all the registration process from a computer. So we didn't need to go out or do anything outside of our houses just to register. And right after registration, we can already claim benefits. So for example, it was easy for us to actually set up our own office through one of the government grants. That was kind of helping other people who have this idea, basically try to create it. They lower the barrier to entry in the startup field.
I'm just trying to figure out like how hard was it actually in the Philippines? Like what were the biggest like barriers you'd say, you know, exist for aspiring entrepreneurs there?
For me, I think the biggest issue that I had with the Philippine scene is the lack of mentors. So actually when I was starting my startup in the Philippines, we applied to an accelerator that is managed by UP Diliman. And then one of the supposedly benefits of that accelerator was that they can match you with an expert in the field. So we were in the accelerator for I think 6 months to a year. And at the end of that period, we still didn't have a mentor in our field. For certain fields, there is a certain lack of mentors, especially in the hardware, deep tech. I think most of the mentors in the Philippines are more into the consumer kind of theme.
I understand. I think mentorship really plays a big role in a startup. Like if you had somebody who could confidently tell you how you're supposed to run your business, or at least give you some hints, then I think you're better off than just like having question marks every day.
Yeah.
And you say you got this kind of support in Singapore?
For the mentors, yes. So for example, for us, we applied with another accelerator managed by NUS, yeah, National University of Singapore. And then they were quickly able to match us with some of the mentors. So that kind of eliminates a lot of the unknown. Or at least we can run by ideas with some people already, tell us this will not work immediately.
I think also at least from what I hear in Europe, is that, or in other countries with a more kind of set up infrastructure for startups, is that, you know, the government plays a role, but at the same time, universities play a big role in this whole startup network, right? And I don't know how that is in the Philippines. But yeah, so you're now in Singapore, you're working for this startup, and what actually happens next?
I was working for this startup, and then we were doing quite a lot of things, ranging from making cow health tastier using AI and IoT. So basically, we were tracking the movement of the cow, and then based on the movement, we try to give them appropriate feeding patterns. So that improves, for example, the milk, the protein or fat content in the milk. So that's one. And then we also made some tracking technologies that which we were supposed to release in China back then. So it's supposed to monitor the foot traffic in areas, even without intrusive sensors. So it passively detects everyone in a specific area. But then there came a point where I felt that maybe it's time for me to start my own company, because I think I've learned enough from the founder of that company and from doing the things that I've done with the startup. Maybe it's time for me to venture. And actually, my co-founders for the startup that I was building were my ex-colleagues in that startup. So it was kind of working with familiar faces already.
Oh, so you started a company in Singapore, actually, after you worked for a startup in Singapore.
Yes, yes. And actually, my co-founders were my co-employees.
And what would your boss in your ex-company feel when you like pirated all his employees to start a new company?
Actually, I was one of the last to quit from that startup. So they kind of moved on. But then we got together again after we had this idea of doing a restaurant management system.
That's a pretty different industry. Like, you go from tracking the patterns of cows to managing restaurants.
Well, for me, in the back end, we're still using AI. It's just that we're using it in a different application. So actually, one problem that we were trying to solve back then was, during that time, there was a labor force shortage in Singapore. That was the time when there was an increase in part-timers. The number of normal employees decreased as well. So we were trying to use AI to kind of balance the shifts between part-timers and also the normal employees for the restaurants.
Oh, okay. And then you would kind of sell this software to the restaurant? Or was it like a one-time consultation?
It's kind of a subscription basis. So for them to be able to use the software continuously.
Oh, that's cool. I've never heard of such a solution. And what eventually would happen to the startup?
After a few months, it failed. One, because there were some players already in the field, which we didn't know at that time. And two, the value add that we were offering, the other portions of the restaurant management system, at that time, we thought it was a good idea, but apparently the restaurants didn't really like it. So the features like being able to track your order or being able to see where your order is in the kitchen. So apparently they didn't really like that idea because, one, they're afraid that we'll be able to see their trade secrets. And also they're quite afraid for other people to see, for example, the other practices, like, for example, accidentally sneezing at your food, for example. Yeah. So we thought that it might be a good idea, but apparently it's not a good fit for the users.
I think if I would be working in a restaurant and I knew that pretty much all the movements I'm doing is being tracked, and I could kind of, you know, get scolded by the manager for doing some shit that I'm not supposed to be doing, then I wouldn't like that software at all.
But yeah, that was one of our mistakes, I think. That we saw the need for the system as a customer of the restaurant, not as a person in it.
Not as the manager or not as a employee.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you were previously part of startups, but you were not a founder yourself. And how was that transition from being part of a startup, like an employee of a startup, to a founder of a startup?
Well, it was definitely difficult. There was a lot more problem. So before, you were just an employee, you had limited set of tasks. But now, as a founder, everything is your problem. And actually, one issue that I had was, since we're kind of bootstrapping, we had the point wherein like I only had like 3 digits in my bank account. And so that was a big issue for me. Like, I don't know if I'll be able to pay the rent for the next 3 months.
Seriously, 3 digits? We're talking 3 digits in peso or Philippine peso?
In Singapore dollars.
In Singapore dollars. Which is still
not enough to pay the rent.
Oh man. And would you actually ask your parents to help you out at that moment?
No. So basically, my whole theme in my life is like proving to my parents that I am a reliable person. Because the normal stereotype for an only child is that you're kind of dependent on your parents, right? But I want to break that stereotype. So I didn't want to ask help from anyone.
Financially, you're at a low point. Mm-hmm. But eventually, I guess you're able to manage that.
Yeah. So now it's a good story to tell now.
Yeah. Pretty epic, man. You had 3-digit Singapore dollars in your bank account. Some way, somehow, you're able to manage it. Mm-hmm. So from that kind of failed startup, well, nothing is really a failure as long as you learn from it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
From that learning experience, so to say, what happened to you next? Did you try founding your own, another startup?
What happened next was that there was this Australian-Brit couple who were running events startup. So I kind of part-timed with them as a developer for their projects while working on my own startup. That also extended my visa because they applied for my employment pass.
So that allowed you to stay in Singapore longer. Mm-hmm. But I guess that wasn't your goal, right? After becoming a founder to working from somebody again, like kind of your path is kind of backwards. How did that make you feel? And were you at that time trying to look for new opportunities?
Well, for me, how I thought about it was that it was a good way for me to work on my startup without devoting full time to a work that would pay my rent. And at the same time, I get to enjoy it since we're doing events for other companies. I was able to attend a lot of different parties with that job.
Attending free parties is sure a good benefit. And at the same time, just networking, going to events and meeting new people is always good, especially if kind of you're on the lookout for new opportunities and you have like a very entrepreneurial mindset. I think that's a perfect kind of opportunity for you. I'm guessing you didn't work there for a long period of time.
Actually, what happened was after we gave up with the startup, I was still working for that events company. And then we were kind of expanding. We were looking for more developers. And actually, that's the time I contacted my co-founder, M, to work for us along with doing some of the event technologies that we were developing.
Oh, so that's how you guys got in touch
reconnected,
with each other.
Yeah.
Reconnected. Mm-hmm. And then from that, I guess that's where your story begins in the Netherlands? Or
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
So actually, I looked in M into that events technology startup. And then we were joining a lot of hackathons back then.
Wow.
Actually, all the people in the hackathon circle, they were quite familiar with us already because we were kind of constants in all the different hackathons. And then most of the time we would either win or at least have some sort of a place in the hackathon. So we were kind of commonplace or familiar with everyone in the circle.
Honestly, I really salute you for being a friend who, you know, you take your childhood friend or a friend from your past who you met in university or in high school, you take him to a new country and give him a job. I think that makes you the perfect friend. So tell me, what's a hackathon like? Because I've heard about it. I have a vague idea of how it works. You get a few people in the developing world to kind of solve problems. And then the first one or the one who has like the best solution kind of wins some money.
Yeah, kind of. So basically what happens is there are some kind of general topics that, for example, they want to solve. So it can be, for example, energy related or, for example, consumer applications that they want to solve. And then within usually around 24 to 48 hours, you're supposed to come up with an idea, a minimum viable product to show how you're planning to solve that problem. And then the last part would be presenting your idea to the judges. So that involves the pitching and some demos.
Okay, so you guys became a staple. You became staple winners. I guess you guys accumulated some cash from winning these hackathons.
Yeah. Actually, one prize that we got like 4 iPads.
Whoa.
Out of that.
Hey, that's a pretty good deal. Yeah. That's a lot of money, actually. So you're still working for this events organization with your current co-founder with M, and you win these hackathons on the side, and then do you then kind of think about starting your own business, or how does that come into the picture?
Yeah, so basically we come up with ideas, right? So if we come up with a good idea, then we try to continue it. Our first product as co-founders was called Presyo Panalo. It was funded by internet.org, by the Facebook initiative. But basically what we do is we try to outsource where the cheapest price for a specific commodity is using crowdsourcing. And then actually with that app, we were able to reach like 40,000 monthly active users.
Wow.
So which was not bad for our startup. So that was kind of our first product.
But that was a side project while you guys were working for this events company.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you had 40,000 monthly users. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you like pursue that full time?
We pursued it. It's just that after some time, we weren't able to monetize that active users. Especially they were in the free internet space.
Yeah, I think that's also a common problem is when you get... So you make a good product, you get people on board. And then at the time where you need to find the perfect kind of formula to get them to pay you guys, then a new problem arises.
Yes.
So you have a lot of experience with startups. You have a lot of experience with coding. And actually, one of the reasons why I asked you guys on this show, and also one of the reasons why how I met your co-founder, Em, is in the Netherlands. So while I was based in the Netherlands, I met M during an embassy event. So the Philippine embassy had an event for the Filipino people living in the Netherlands, people who were working there or studying there. And I met M, and I thought he had like this wonderful idea. So I found him because he was actually, you guys were able to eventually found your own startup and get funded by a venture capital firm based in the Netherlands. So tell me, how do you come from, you know, this roller coaster ride of you guys in Singapore, building new products, joining hackathons while working for an events company, to finding this opportunity in the Netherlands to start your own startup and get funded?
So actually, the thing that we're doing now, it was actually an idea that came from another hackathon. So the hackathon was actually funded by the German government back then, GIZ, if you're familiar with them. They were looking for a sustainability products. So we had this idea to like balance the cost and the demand of electricity prices. So we had that idea. We were able to build an MVP. We got funded by GIZ. And then we were trying to sell the product already to consumers. And then after doing that, we got an email from Rockstart, which was the Dutch accelerator that funded us, asking us to apply. So it was kind of a random email. Probably they just look for startups in a specific field, like energy, sustainability. And then we decided to apply to complete the form. And then we got shortlisted. And then we got a call from them that they'll be inviting us to their kind of selection process. So it took us a couple of Skype calls with several mentors in their network and also with a program director. And then basically, they were the ones who selected us from the hundreds of startups that applied to the program. And then they decided to stick with us.
Wow, man. Congratulations. That sounds like, I mean, you've won quite a few stuff during your hackathons, but I guess this was the biggest prize.
Yes, exactly. Even the move to the Netherlands, that was the really big, one of the biggest changes that we experienced.
You know what's interesting is that you mentioned that the German government is actually who funded your product, your project first. And I think this is because Germany has this goal to achieve like carbon neutrality by a certain year. This year keeps on changing, but I think it's in the next 10 years. I have no clue. And I think this is also one of the big pushes from the European Union as a whole. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the Netherlands is. Goal is and how they fit into all of this. But I'm sure they have their own kind of agenda. So you mentioned this whole process of applying and stuff. So you have the product, it's built, you have some funding from the German government. What else actually did you need to prove to this Dutch VC for them to give you the funding?
The biggest question was, how do we get customers?
Uh-huh.
So that was the most difficult part for us. So actually, when we came up with the idea, our initial target for this was corporates, factories already. But then, back in the Philippines, it was difficult for us to convince factories because, one, they don't want to pay for the installation of the system. And two, they don't trust us immediately. So that was difficult for us to prove. So we kind of shifted from factories to smaller clients. So we focused first on retail clients. I mean, so people running shops. So that was kind of our first few clients. Once we proved that, it was easier for us to actually talk with Rockstar.
Okay, let's go back a little bit, rewind a little bit. Maybe you can tell us a bit about this product that you guys created and how it funded.
Sure. So our idea back then was basically when you're consuming electricity, you buy it from one place, which is electricity spot market. In this place, generators sell their electricity at different prices depending on their costs. And then consumers, who is kind of bundled together by either the distributor or some other entity, try to buy the cheapest electricity or electricity from that market. So what we do is we try to match the prices with the lowest cost, for example. And if that's not possible, for example, if the prices of the electricity are quite high, we store the electricity during the times when it's at its lowest. So that when the prices of electricity are quite high, you can use your reserves of cheap electricity to run your facility. So in theory, you can save a lot, so around 50 to 70% of the costs using that kind of technique.
Okay. And then, so with this idea, you eventually got the okay from this Dutch VC. And the process, you said after a few Skype calls, you guys were admitted and you actually beat out several other, well, hundreds of other startups. So now that you get accepted, do your parents' perception of you change? And do they now understand what you're doing?
Actually, up until now, I still feel that they don't know what I'm doing. It has something to do with computers and AI. But the actual details, they don't.
Hey, but you jumped from the Philippines to Singapore and to the Netherlands. And I'm pretty sure because you're not asking from any money from them, they know, they have an idea that you're actually independent and reliable.
I hope so. I'm afraid to ask them face to face. I'm afraid to ask them, Mom, are you proud of me?
All right, so you guys now reach the Netherlands. You've got the funding, you've got the okay, you get your visas ready, and you now move to the Netherlands. So what was your first impression when you got to the Netherlands? What actually happened?
So actually, my co-founder might be a better person to tell the story. Ask him specifically what happened right after we got off the airport and got into our Uber.
Actually, this is a 1 out of 2 episode. We have right now with us one of the co-founders of One Watt, Pau, and in the next episode, we're going to hear from his co-founder, M, who he actually spoke a lot about in this interview. And it will be interesting for him to continue the story of, you know, what happened when you guys actually were in the Netherlands, when you guys were starting your company, you're founding your company. At the same time, that whole process of this visa, because actually, a lot of people think, you know, in order for you to move to Europe, you know, there are a few ways that you can come here. It's either you find work, it's either you study here. But actually, there's another way to get to Europe, and it's via these startup visas, which a lot of different countries in Europe are now offering other entrepreneurs. So yeah, Pau, thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you so much for sharing with us your super funny and roller coaster life in Singapore and in the Philippines, and now here in the Netherlands. I'm really, really interested in hearing what M has to say.
Sure. Thanks as well.
And to all you listeners out there, stay tuned for the second part of the series interviewing the guys from One Watt. If you like more business-related content, don't forget to leave a comment on my Instagram or Facebook posts. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Pop Your Cultural Cherry. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other podcast streaming platforms. To be updated with our latest episodes, don't forget to give us a like and a follow on our Facebook page and our Instagram account.